secrets lie in the border fires and the humming wires. Yeah, man, you know you're never coming back. Across the square, across the bridge, past the mills, past the stacks. On a gathering storm comes a tall, handsome man in a dusty black coat with a red right hand.
Club podcast. Got me and Rudy here today.
How's it going, Rudy?
It's going wonderful.
So in commemoration, is that the right word? Doesn't commemoration make sense?
To commemorate
the opening of Scream 4, which opens tonight at midnight. We're going to do a little retrospective in which we give our thoughts on the entire original Wes Craven Scream trilogy.
Gonna be a scream, baby.
I don't know, I guess we could start off, well, not with the first, Wes Craven, do you like him as a horror director?
I don't really, like, besides the Scream stuff, I don't really know him. I mean, I know he did the Nightmare on Elm Street, but, like, I never really watched the Nightmare on Elm Street film, so, I don't know. Yourself?
He was pretty decent. I like Nightmare on Elm Street. I'm not a huge fan, but
I mean,
it was a pretty cool series, pretty inventive series.
Well, yeah, yeah. The whole premise of, like, killing teenagers through their dreams is pretty original. Yeah. And then Freddy Krueger is a pretty iconic slasher villain.
Yeah,
I mean, he's comedic and he's scary at times.
Yeah. And then then there's Ghostface, who we're talking about. It's pretty good. Pretty iconic character as well. Not as iconic as Freddy Krueger, but...
Or Jason Voorhees or Michael Myers.
So he's pretty much been a horror guy. A horror director his whole career.
Of course, he's taken a lot from past other horror directors or slasher directors.
Yeah, revisiting these films, like, you could tell he's trying to do. He's trying to take a lot from, like, the history of the genre.
Especially
kind of pay respects to it.
Yeah, but you see more so Michael Myers and to a lesser extent Jason Voorhees more than any other slasher villain or whatever.
What do you mean? As far as who he's paying respects to or what?
Well, elements.
Okay. Yeah, I guess we'll get more into that.
And even Freddy, because, like, there's sort of a comedic aspect to Ghostface and, you know, Freddy Krueger of the three, you know, Michael Myers, Jason, and Freddy. He's the more comedic of the three, actually.
The only.
Yeah, the first two are, like, comedic.
They don't talk.
I mean, some of their later films are comedic. You know?
Not intentional. Well,
yeah, you know what I mean.
Well, Jason, intentional. Halloween's not. Intentional humor.
No, I meant in the quality of the film.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Like,
they're just a joke.
Yeah. Well, I don't agree with that, but whatever.
They become a joke.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you make so many sequels, you know.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what happened to the Scream franchise.
Yeah. Particularly in part 3. The show's painfully so in part 3. But we'll get to that. All
right. Well, I guess that's enough Wes Craven talk or whatever. We'll get into the first film, Scream.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes?
Who is this?
Who are you trying to reach?
What number is this?
What number are you trying to reach?
I don't know.
Well, I think you have the wrong number.
Do I?
It happens. Take it easy.
All right, so what is there to say? What is there to say about Scream 1?
Scream 1, you know, the epitome of 1990s, you know, when you had that sudden burst of slasher flicks.
Yeah.
Scream pretty much ignited it, you know, brought the whole slasher genre back, but for the 90s.
Yeah.
And, like, revisiting the first one, like, it totally captures the 90s. And you kind of realize, like, yeah, it's been a long time here since the first Scream, and times are definitely different, you know? Especially with how teenagers talk and how they interact. Like, you know, it's just a little bit more different.
So the film itself, obviously, it was revolutionary because it pretty much, you know, had a clever way of kind of playing with the rules of the genre, kind of like noticing, like pointing out that there is rules, but still working within those rules.
Yeah,
the movie.
Which is why the first Scream worked so well, because it was parodying horror movies.
Exactly. It's that, but it's like a, like I was thinking something similar to it, like Shaun of the Dead. You have something that's like parodying zombie films, but it's also taking the material seriously.
And if you think about it, that Scream really brought the whole parodying cinema, you know, to the mainstream. You know, because, well, you had The Scary Movie, which was a parody of a movie that was parodying horror movies, but Scary Movie is just dead on parody. I mean, just like in your face. But then after that, you know, you mentioned Shaun of the Dead, and there's been plenty of other films where it's about parodies now. Actually, that seems to be in. I mean, it's getting kind of tired, actually, you know, parodying.
Well, I mean, as much as Scream, like, reignited the slasher genre, it kind of ruined it, too, in a way, because...
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of bad, like, imitation slashers came out. And just the fact that they're being so aware, like, having just bringing it to a certain level of awareness, and then it just becomes funny, so then you can't really take much else serious.
But we're going off the rails a little bit.
Yeah, we need to start talking about the actual film.
The first Scream introduces... Well, it opens up with
Drew Barrymore,
which is always fun to rewatch.
Yeah, it's a perfect scene.
Yeah, you know, she plays it so well. I mean, it's not a lot to it, but you know, she really gets you into the scene.
Yeah,
she's really dramatic. You just really feel for this girl, and it's like you just keep on saying to yourself, why did she just hang up the phone? But best opening of the three by far. You get Drew Barrymore, she gets gutted and everything, and pretty much that sets in motion all these, you know, these core group of teenagers just talking about how gruesome, but yeah, how kind of cool it is that there's a gruesome murder committed in the student body, somebody they knew, in their classmates, got gutted, and they think it's kind of cool in a way.
Yeah,
you know? And then they start recalling or bringing up all these rules of horror movies. You know, I mean, that's pretty much the dialogue for the film. I mean, just them referencing horror films. I mean, well, even in the beginning, when you have Casey Becker, Drew Barrymore's character, her parents walk in. And the mom and dad are like, they don't know what to do. So dad told the mom to go run to McKinsey's, drive to the McKinsey's, call the police, which is a direct line from the first Halloween when Laurie Strode is what's the kid's name?
Tommy,
to run over to the McKinsey's. That's pretty cool. But what other lines, like, what's her face? Tatum's character? The actress, what's her?
Rose McGowan?
The hot Rose McGowan. I forgot her line.
Super bitch? Sydney super bitch?
I don't know. Where she tells Sydney, it's like, you're starting to sound like some Wes Carpenter flick. She just mismatched two horror directors there. Just lines like that made the film really, really good. But then, he had an awesome cast. Neve Campbell fit perfectly the role of the final girl. You ready?
The heroine, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's why I think the original is so much better than the other ones, because there's no flaws in the cast. Like, everybody is good. It's just a great young cast. You know, Matthew Lillard.
Yeah, Matthew Lillard.
He's hilarious.
I love that line where he's like, leave her alone.
Yeah, he says a lot of funny things.
But, yeah, he's awesome.
And then Jamie Kennedy, which is my favorite, obviously. He's my favorite character in the series. He's just hilarious.
Yeah.
As this guy, you know, he's always referencing films and always, obviously has a huge love for it, and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, he's pretty much the main one to bring up all these roles.
Yeah, exactly. And then obviously, I mean, I never knew that about that line you mentioned about Gordon McKenzie's, but like Scream 1 is like throughout the whole film he's paying respects to Halloween.
Yeah.
And you know, so for me, I love that shit.
And I loved how he synced up as they were watching the first Halloween. How he synced up the scenes with what's going on in real life at the party.
And it worked, you know. It gave you a certain amount of tension, just having that music playing.
And then we're talking about the cast. Courtney Cox is dead on as
Gail Weathers, or
news reporter. Because, you know, she has that face, she has that quality that, you know, and that she could be this bitchy, really ambitious reporter.
I mean, you
can't see her in any other role, really.
That's something I like throughout the whole series. Like, as much as, like, maybe the second two films aren't as good, obviously, that relationship I always enjoyed, like, throughout the whole series,
but,
between her and David Arquette.
I mean, we'll get into it as we continue talking about the other two films, but it gets kind of tired. You know, it's like, I love you, I hate you. It's like,
well, I mean, that's because, I mean, but, yeah, we'll get into it, but it does fit into her character. I could see her character being that way, you know?
Yeah.
Even though it may grow tiresome. But I think another... I mean, yeah, we're getting off topic, but I think another big reason of why it's tiresome, like, if you watch the movies back-to-back, it just, you know, you would seem to get annoyed by certain things. And you know, but when they originally came out, they were years apart, so it probably wouldn't have seemed such a big deal if you didn't watch it back-to-back.
Good point, but, like, now we try to save all... our general points,
exactly.
Our overview points for the end. Okay, so...
More Scream stuff.
More Scream 1. I think I said a good amount on the first Scream. Now it's your turn.
Well, I mean...
We just finished discussing...
I, like, covered
the,
over
the
my
cast.
Notes. I mean,
I mean, one of the reasons why Scream 1 is obviously the best movie. I mean, you can never top original films.
Yeah. Well, I think it's one of the best
movies.
Well,
not never. I just rarely done.
I think it's the best film because the Scream films, all of them is all about a whodunit, you know, who's the killer. And they made you care about that aspect the most in the first one, and it worked the best in the first one. You know, so that's why I liked it. And then the climax, like the last, you know, half hour in that house, it was awesome. I don't know. I only had a handful of notes, and yeah.
It's your best kill from the first movie.
It was the opening.
Well, the opening, and then it would be Rose McGowan.
Even though it's kind not of, practical, but
yeah, it's like there's no way that door,
the garage
door,
heavy ass.
would have held her weight. Just when I crashed on her.
Yeah.
But it was still cool. It was like, oh, cool. She died. Yeah, she died in the most creative way.
Yeah,
even though it was...
It was a good death scene, but yeah. I can't forget about the opening. I mean, the opening's obvious, but just the way, like...
Well, yeah.
She gets killed, and then the parents come home, and her mom's on the phone.
Yeah.
Hearing her getting stabbed.
I was talking to somebody about this, a friend. And, you know, she grew up in the suburbs and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I guess I was never really able to relate to the opening of the first, you know, Drew Barrymore scene.
Yeah.
But when I was talking to this girl, it's like, she's like, oh, that scared the hell out of me because, you know, she often found herself in that situation, like, where she was home alone, out in the middle of nowhere. Because, you know, she lived in the suburbs.
And, yeah.
And it's like, to her, that was scary as hell. But, like, I found that fascinating because, like, here I am, a city guy. And it's like, so something's always going on. There's people always around you. So I thought that was pretty cool. You know, that whole aspect. I mean, you know, cool. It's like something that's different from what I'm used to.
Yeah.
That's why I couldn't like relate to it fully. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, I could definitely see why somebody would be scared of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Come on, so much to be said about the first one. I mean, done so much. I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. Neve Campbell, she was great. I mean, just her. I don't know. She's. I mean.
I guess we always go back to the first one.
Yeah.
Just for the sake of keeping the flow, let's just move on to the second one.
Okay. So in the second one, we got basically they go to college.
Oh,
the college years of Scream.
Yeah. They move on from.
From the small town of Woodsboro to some college, Windsor College. To Windsor College, but so yeah, that's where that the film starts off. We're at the premiere of Stab, which is the movie within the movie about what happened in Woodsboro, and we're following Jada Pinkett Smith and Omar Epps as they're attending his premiere. So,
and that was an awesome aspect, you know, the whole movie within the movie. I mean, it's like.
Yeah.
Again, it took the whole parodying to the next level.
Yeah.
Where it's like, in reality, if you get a situation like that where you can totally draw a story from it and make money, it would totally would happen. And that's exactly what they were trying to comment on in Second Scream. It's like just the commercial aspect.
Yeah.
Of
I just really like the opening just because you're in this theater and like just the way he set up like the environment of all the people attending this show and they have a Stab-O-Vision. It was just I mean obviously that's probably something that I would never like really experience as far as like a movie theater experience like it seemed out there but you know he was trying to live up to an opening to the same scale well not the same well,
well yeah
a much greater scale than the original.
And I think it worked, I mean...
Yeah, I think I thought it was a really great opening.
Yeah, because, you have these two people who are... Well, Jada Pinkett Smith, her character, Maureen.
Yeah.
Her name is Maureen in the film. You know, she gets killed among all these people, and they all think it's a joke, because, like, from the get-go, it was just, like, this wild, entertaining experience, and everybody was just going crazy, just getting caught up in the hype.
Yeah.
It's like they're watching a horror movie that's based on real murders. So like everyone's wearing masks and just a bunch of craziness going on.
Yeah.
It would have to be a really it would be a pretty annoying experience if you're trying to watch a film.
Well, no, I thought it would be kind of cool.
I'm sure to some people.
Maybe
I definitely would love it. It's like get her ass, kill her.
Yeah, but I mean it was I don't know just the way they set up the characters. I really like Jada Smith and how she was acting throughout it, like
sassy.
Yeah, she's like you know like the dialogue in these films is something that is really good just because it's always clever, you know, knowing whatever clever aware dialogue. But I just liked how she like didn't want to go there, rather see the Sandra Bullock film and just the interplay between the two of them. But then when you realize like she actually doesn't like watching stuff like this, she's actually pretty terrified. Where she has to leave the theater at one point.
And she's making all these comments like why the bitch gotta be naked?
I love when she yells at the screen and you're like, shut up. But
and then she's like about then they bring up the whole, you know, how black characters never really survive in films like this.
Yeah. Yeah, and actually,
the Sasha film is not made for the black community.
Yeah, but ever since Scream and mentioning that and being aware, films coming. I know it's an overgeneralization, but I mean, I know I'm giving a general thought on the series in general, but this film. I mean, that was pretty the only aspect of the film where they were trying to bring that about how you know black people don't survive in horror movies and stuff like that.
Well, they brought it up later on again in that film with the camera.
Yeah, I'll talk about that fucking useless character. But I mean, I'm just saying, ever since like Scream had like, or you know, ever since the Scream films came out, black characters have had stronger roles in slasher films where they're the characters that survive stuff like that. You know, stuff like
going against what you might expect.
Though. Exactly,
they're black, they're gonna die.
Yeah, so.
But, I mean, I wasn't saying that Sasha Films are not made for the black community. I'm just saying this, she was making a comment saying, these movies are all the same about just stupid white people getting cut the fuck up.
Yeah.
And it was like, a real person or a black person, which is, I don't know. Did she make a comment like that? Where it's like,
I mean, she was talking about white girls.
Or something.
No, she doesn't. When she's watching the movie, she yells at the girl. She's like, just hang up on Star 69 is that. That was funny.
Or when the theater attendant, as they're walking in, and gives her
the costume. Mask. And she's like, oh, white face. That was...
Oh, it's white.
That was so stupid.
Yeah, it was. Enough about...
No. I don't want to leave it yet. I don't want to leave the opening yet.
Okay.
Because... I don't know. I mean, maybe it was just me reading too much into it, but when Omar Epps goes to the restroom in the opening, and that's where he dies.
I thought it was impeccable how the Goldface killer knew exactly where his...
Yeah, that was ridiculous. That was ridiculous, but when whoever the killer is, Ghostface, ends up, like, dressing up as him,
yeah.
I was reminded of Halloween.
Yeah.
5. And I wonder if that was a conscious decision on what's
Craven's
sure part.
It was.
Maybe it wasn't. I mean, because it's Halloween 5, you know? But that's what I was reminded of. Like, he would go that far.
Yeah, because they had a similar scene in Halloween 5 where Tina's boyfriend, right? He gets killed.
Yeah, he gets killed, like, early in the film, and then Michael's just hanging out with her the whole film.
Yeah,
he goes to a party with her.
He's wearing the mask, he has his jacket on.
He's driving the car, driving them everywhere, which that's one of the reasons, problems I have with that film. It's like, why is he doing any of this? It makes no sense.
Uh-huh.
No, but that's not...
He's enjoying the setup to his kills.
Yeah, but...
Like, he's savoring.
He's after a little girl, he's not after... Anyway... but then we...
I don't know, if I was a killer, I would save her. My moment.
After that, we go to college, where, you know, the news kind of starts to break that these two people, they're not teenagers, two college students are killed at this premiere.
And then Nev Campbell, who gets a caller ID now.
Yeah.
And, like, with the film opening, you know, Stab.
Yeah.
With the film opening, I guess she's getting all these prank callers, you know, or whatnot.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, after that, after this happens, she kind of goes, she finds out about this, and then she wants to go talk to Randy. And then I really enjoyed that part.
Well, yeah, it was definitely cool, you know, to see the cast from the first one come back and reunite. It was definitely cool and humbling.
It was cool.
How they set that up, and it was awesome. It brought a smile back.
Okay, I really like when you first come to Randy and he's in this film theory class and they're talking about sequels and stuff.
Oh, yeah, no,
stuff was just awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. You want to go into detail about that? What they were talking about?
Do you remember? Well, I mean, they were. Well, at first they were talking about, like, can you blame like violence in art or whatever in cinema, that it could actually motivate people to commit real crimes? Because obviously this is what's happening. People, the killer of this film is mirroring what happened in the original film.
Yeah, copycat.
So obviously he's being
copycat murder.
Yeah. So they're kind of discussing that theme.
But then they get into the whole.
After that, they get into
the sequel.
Yeah.
They're just talking about
sequels, and then Randy kind of pokes fun and says that, you know, why would you do a sequel? Sequels are horrible, you know?
But then they're bringing up all these sequels that either live up or precede its predecessor.
Yeah.
And they brought up, like, Godfather 2.
They brought up Aliens, which I didn't agree with, but some of them didn't. I mean, I love that Randy said, you know, whatever, Ridley Scott's better than James Cameron. Because the original is better, but...
T2,
he was right, you know, so they bring up the whole James Cameron thing, and then they bring up The Godfather, you know? I mean, I like it. It's not, like... I like that they're like, discussing mainstream, like, cinema, you know?
Yeah.
Like, Hollywood cinema. That's what I like. I think this series is always... That's what it's about, you know? So, it's
critiquing,
Hollywood. But, I mean, it's also... Yeah, it's so, you know, it's for everybody.
Because
everybody knows those films.
And then, but actually, it seemed like, well, in the Scream films, it's more set up and more dialogue than actual kills.
Yeah.
Like, the kills are sort of far in between. Because, okay, so So you get Jada Pinkett Smith and her boyfriend Omar Epps. So they get killed.
Yeah.
And, like, and well, you know, they're doing the whole cast reuniting and setting up where Nev is at. But then you get to the awesome. I thought it was pretty good. The whole Sarah Michelle Gellar. She's alone in the store.
Yeah, I was really like disappointed with that. I mean, I remember it being a decent scene, but it's like, I don't know. Well, there was the opening in the original. There was, and also in the original film, you had this scene where Sydney first gets stalked, like gets kind of chased around her house, which was just awesome. And it's just, I don't know, the Sarah Michelle Gellar scene, it wasn't long enough, you know? It's like she got killed. No. The only part that was long of it was the setup, was the phone call part. But as soon as he attacks her, like he offs her pretty quickly. He like gets, she runs upstairs, he stabs her in the back and throws her off the balcony, you know? It's like, I mean, compare something like that to I Know What You Did Last Summer. Like, those scenes don't even compare at all.
Well, her whole chase and death scene in I Know What You Did Last Summer was superior. It was actually one of the few and better aspects of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Of I Know What You Did Last Summer, her scene. But yeah, I thought it was cool that, you know, she's connected to two successful slasher movies. I Know We Did That Summer and Scream 2. And I think that's what they kind of do, or Wes Craven is trying to do, like a who's who of slasher flicks and whatnot.
Yeah.
Or horror movies in general.
And then it's, I don't know, like, Scream 2 had, like, such a huge cast. I mean, there was a lot of side characters that were just there, you know? But they were, like, known faces. There was... what's that chick? She was the killer in Rebecca Gayheart. She was the killer in Urban Legend. She's in it, and you got Portia de Rossi, Ellen's wife, which she had like the worst eyebrows. Like her eyebrows, she needed to pluck them. And then you had this cameraman. Yeah. And then you have this cameraman who, yeah, I mean, obviously that was something.
Black cameraman.
But he didn't do anything in the whole fucking film. He didn't do a damn thing.
He was there to kind of throw you off track to make you think, oh, is he the killer? Because remember the scene where they're looking for, you know, where Randy, David, and David Arquette's character.
They're out in the park?
Yeah, and looking for the killer. But before that, he leaves them,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and then all of a sudden you get the phone call.
Yeah, yeah.
And he had similar boots,
but
too.
He came back with donuts. So.
Yeah. I was like, oh,
no, it's like I was watching it, and it's like his character was just I didn't get the point of him. Well, I mean, first of all, when he was there, he was annoying, and I thought maybe they opened the film with this you know, rules about black people and horror films, and then they don't do anything with him.
Well, that was the whole point of it, trying to prove that.
Prove what? I don't know.
That he did a smart thing. He just like walked away. It's like, you know what? Enough of this shit.
No,
I'm gonna
get
my ass killed. I'm walking away. It's like he did a smart thing.
Yeah, I don't know. And then
he served his purpose.
He was bad. I mean, he was so annoying whenever he would speak.
Yeah, he was. But I thought he served his purpose. Good. I mean, as far as like what I believe they're trying to say or comment on.
Oh, I don't know about that.
But then, you have the setup where, pretty much like the first one, where it's like you have Gail Weathers trying to, they're all trying to find out who the killer is.
Yeah.
So in the first one, Gail Weathers and Dewey, Dave Arquette's character, they sort of realize. That they like each other, and this one, it starts off with they haven't heard each other from a while because Gail, as ambitious as she is, she's like got caught up with her work, you know, with her new book, with the new movie,
yeah,
and to trying to be this awesome reporter, and like Dewey feels left out. It's like, oh, I thought we had something going, and then you just forget about me. So he's annoyed by that, and calling her writing mediocre writing. That was pretty funny. But there's still feelings there, and they end up working together like they did in the first one. And
those scenes always worked for me with them too. I also liked how they with this, you know, the movie within the movie, Stab, how they would recreate scenes from the original. It was just cool to see them do it. You had Heather Graham playing the Casey role in the opening. And then later on, you have Tori Spelling and Luke Wilson, and Luke Wilson was so hilarious.
Yeah.
Playing Billy Loomis. It was so good. I wish there was... I guess there was enough of that, but it would have been cool to see a little bit more of that.
I think they purposely... Well, yeah, it was definitely on purpose, where they had the cheesy dialogue in a Stab film, where it's like, you know, Heather Graham, you know, as Casey Becker, she's like... Stick on the phone. It's like, you know, I don't even know you, but I dislike you already. It's like horrible.
But
it was done on purpose.
But then in the scene with Tori Spelling and Billy, like, the dialogue was word for word what it was in the original film. You know what I mean? It was weird.
But you could totally tell that Luke Wilson, like, he just wanted to burst out laugh.
Yeah, he was just being cheesy. Yeah. I mean, that's what I liked. I liked that Wes Craven like was able to make fun of himself.
Yeah,
you know.
In the first Scream, Drew Barrymore's line, she had a line, she's like, they're talking about the Friday 13th films, and she's like, the first one was great, but the rest of them sucked.
Yeah.
And Wes Craven, he says, like, that wasn't his idea to put that in the film, because obviously, you know, he directed those films. Why would he say they all sucked? But that's awesome that he just left it in there, you know, and there's another line. In the first film, how Nev and all her friends, well, Sydney and her friends, and they say, Sydney, wouldn't it be cool if this was made into a movie? Like, who do you think they'll get to play you?
Mm-hmm.
And what was it, Dewey, he goes, I see you as a young... As a young Meg Ryan, and Sydney, she goes, "Oh, thanks, Dewey, but with my luck, they'll probably get Tori Spelling." And then in the second film, the Stab film based on the first movie, they actually get Tori Spelling to play. But wasn't that kind of like, oh man, like, they'll probably get someone crappy like Tori Spelling to play me?
I mean, yeah, that was a joke, but whatever.
And Tori Spelling,
she got work, whatever.
Yeah, she got work. The only reason why she gets work is because of her dad.
Yeah.
What's his name? Something Spelling? 90210 guy?
I don't know.
Anyways.
I don't know how to watch 90210.
No, but he created it. This old geezer guy, anyway.
I can't think of his name. Yeah, I don't know. Like, as far as Scream 2, the reason that I didn't like it is because it just didn't feel like they're in danger. You know what I mean? It definitely did feel. I mean, they definitely were in danger, but it seemed like the movie was preoccupied with like being clever within this within this world of playing up the rules,
which becomes a problem in the third one. But we'll get to that.
Yeah, it becomes a big problem, but you know it. It starts to become a problem, like, in the second half of this film. You know, it does have a strong opening and a kind of strong setup when you're meeting these characters again. But, like, I don't know. It's not taking it seriously. It's trying too hard to poke fun at it. Whereas the first one, you know, had that perfect balance where you're taking it seriously, but you're also, you know, you're also being comedic about it, too. And this one just balances it off.
The second one, second Scream... it was still a decent film because it was able to retain some of the originality of the first one.
Yeah.
But it just like lacked in the suspense. One of the few suspenseful parts was in the cop car with Sydney and her. And her friend. What was her friend's name?
I don't know. I liked her a lot though. I liked that black girl a lot. She was good.
Her name's Elise, I think. The actress or something. Anyway, when they're trapped in a cop car, and they need to go to the front, and pass some Ghostface,
who's knocked out because they just got into a car accident.
So that was a pretty good scene.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was, like, the Michelle Geller scene was decent, you know. And then when Randy gets killed, which is a shame that they kill Randy. I thought that scene was pretty well done. It was funnier more than anything, but it still was well done. And I remember when I initially saw that, you know, how disappointed I was that they killed his character off.
Okay, so we haven't brought up several important characters. Jerry O'Connell, he's Nev's college boyfriend.
Yeah.
And they go, again, that road where it's like, oh, maybe he's a killer.
Well, yeah.
Maybe your boyfriend is a killer.
It's like obviously they're trying to.
I mean, it's an obvious setup.
No. They're just. I mean, I like that they did that because they're. I mean, obviously Sydney, Nev Campbell's character, she's gonna have trust problems because of what happened to her. But so I thought that was good. I mean, I never really expected Jerry O'Connell at all. But I don't know. Do you want to get into the killers themselves or what?
Yeah, yeah. Those are two other characters that we need to talk about.
Yeah. So one of them is actually mentioned in the trailer for Scream 2. They actually mentioned the killer in the trailer, Mickey. Because remember when Randy's talking about who it could be when he's talking with Dewey about it?
Yeah.
And then he goes, Mickey, the freaky Tarantino's film student?
Yeah,
and he ends up being the killer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's like his character, I don't know. I mean, when I initially saw that film, there's no way I would have guessed who the killers are.
Yeah.
But, like, the two characters ended up being, which is Mickey, and then the other one being Laurie Metcalf, who plays Billy's mom. Do you remember her name? What was her character's name?
No, but she was just a mousy reporter character.
Yeah.
Not really mousy, but she was, like, the suck-up reporter who was annoying the heck out of Gale.
Yeah, it was like, I don't know, like he was in a film, but he didn't really... served like he was there, and it's like seeing it now, it just seems so noticeable that he's there, and it seems so noticeable that Laurie Metcalf is there.
Yeah.
It's like it's like they're just in the background. It's like, I don't know. I mean, I'm not gonna say it's obvious because obviously it wasn't. I couldn't guess
initially.
It. But now just thinking about it, it just seems sloppy.
That's why they had the black character, the cameraman, because you hardly see him too. I mean,
He's barely. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, he has a decent amount of dialogue in the scene, but like it's always convenient that he's nowhere around when killing's happening. So like he was there to be for the viewer a suspect.
But yeah, I don't know. I never got that from his character. I never suspected him. You know, I mean, I recall him having a bigger role in the film, but he doesn't. He's just kind of in the background, just like Mickey's in the background, just like Laurie Metcalf's character in the background.
Again, you know, to have more suspects.
Yeah, but the whodunit aspect was not good.
Yeah.
At all, you know.
Well, I mean,
there wasn't any really.
You didn't see the reporter thing coming. I mean, that was a pretty cool twist. It's like, she's actually Billy's mother.
Yeah,
and which is kind of a homage to. The first Friday the 13th, you know, where it's like the killer was actually Jason's.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. Like the first one's Halloween, the second one's Friday the 13th. You know, like they're just trying to pay respects to that. And yeah, to me, the climax worked. You know, I mean, as much as I felt like those characters weren't like, I don't know, hinted at enough. I mean, they don't really need to hint at them, but they were just an aside. But the climax itself, I thought worked well. Throughout all the films, really, but
I
thought it worked well. I thought the reveal was good and all that stuff.
I thought the whole Mickey saying, you know, Sydney's boyfriend Jerry O'Connell, he was hanging on the thing, which in retrospect, I'm like, why did they just leave him hanging there? You know, when his fraternity, they were hazing him.
Yeah, they were just gonna leave him there until someone finds him. It's harsh, but
okay. I guess that, yeah.
You remember why he did it, right? Like, he gave away his letters or whatever.
Yeah. But, like, okay, so Sydney finds him and she's trying to untie him. Then Mickey shows up and says that they're working together.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he ends up dying with Sydney believing or mistrusting him in his final moments.
Yeah.
Then he dies before any reconciliation can happen.
Yeah, that was fucked up. That was good. I mean, I did like how Mickey was trying to do that.
Oh, I mean,
trying to mess with her head or whatever. That was good.
But when Mickey reveals himself as the killer, he was really good. You know, he definitely had that whole psychotic thing down.
I didn't like him when he was, you know, just this whatever.
Just his friend.
One of his classmates. I didn't like his acting. But yeah, when he had to do that killer turn, it was really good.
And then,
and what do you think of the whole, like, I don't know, the weird Greek mythology? I don't know what that was all about.
I mean, I kind of appreciate it, you know, because, that's a good thing to touch base on, because you want to talk about Sydney's growth.
Yeah.
So in this one, she has trust issues, and she's just trying to stay in the background unnoticed and just, like, live a normal life. But she's having all these trust issues, and, you know, she feels like she can't be strong. But, she's having this whole talk with the director of this play she's in. She's in the lead in, and he's telling her that she needs to be strong or whatever, find a strength, just like the character she's trying to portray, Cassandra, who had these visions. Well, in the mythology of Cassandra, she was this woman who was cursed to have these ill visions of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And every time she tried to warn somebody, she would... she'll get frowned upon, really, because she's giving them bad news. She's giving them news that she's revealing news that people don't want to hear. That just like really negative stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that could make, well, Sydney obviously has a lot to relate to with that character, because being fated like that or having that curse, like you're gonna be alone. So, but in that loneliness, you need to find your strength. Mm-hmm. So I think that's how it's kind of related.
Yeah, I understand the themes. I don't know. I didn't feel like that was.
Oh yeah, I mean,
completely necessary. Like I thought they should, you know, focus on what's going on. I mean, that's the problem. They don't seem to be focusing on what's going on or what the characters are going through, as far as there's somebody out there murdering people.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean,
you just don't feel like there's times when it doesn't seem like they've taken it as seriously as they should be taking
exactly,
it. You know?
Exactly. But it's a movie.
No, it's not even about them. It shouldn't. You know, they should be taken. I mean, yeah, you could still have fun, but I don't know.
No, I definitely get what you mean. It's like people are getting killed on campus grounds, and you're worried about a play. Like, and I mean, Sydney's obviously in the center of this. Like you're thinking if she was a real person, she'd be like, I need to get the fuck out of here. You know?
Exactly. Why would you just stay there?
Oh, and then they bring up Cotton Weary.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. We're like abandoning like a pretty big part of the movie
where you only see him in certain instances in the first one, which is like the news footage or whatever. I mean, because he was implicated in the murder of Sydney's mother, who Sydney.
Had an affair with. Sydney wrongfully accused the mother had an affair with Cotton Weary. So he served like a.
No. She wrongfully accused him of the murder of her mother.
Yes, but I'm saying they had an affair.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. I don't even know what I said about Sydney.
No. Anyways, moving on.
But yeah, he served like a 1-year sentence for that.
Oh, yeah. So he gets his full. He's in the spotlight now.
Yeah.
He's no longer this character that's being talked about.
Yeah.
He's this full-on character in the second one. But he definitely is intense. I mean, he's supposed to be, because he's supposed to be another suspect.
Yeah, they're definitely trying to, you know, kind of, make you be very suspected of him. I mean, I just liked how his character was just this guy who was just out for fame. And like he's not worried about what's going on. He just wants to talk to Sydney about, you know, getting on 2020 or whatever.
Yeah, because, well, I mean,
it was silly, but it was still cool.
But he also wanted to clear his name too. I mean, because he still had.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he's living this life where people, even though he got off for what he did, people are still gonna, you know, look twice at him.
Which would have been too obvious if he was the killer. I mean, or not too obvious, just like. Distasteful.
Yeah.
You know, it's like if he was a killer, because that's pretty obvious thing. Like, if to kill somebody who wrongfully accused you of something, and sent you to prison, which came back full circle in the end, where you got that altercation between Miss Sydney looks like she's about to get shot by Billy's mother, Cotton. comes in and like they're kind of like kind of debating, or it seems like he's kind of debating, should I save her, should I not save her?
Yeah,
because Billy's mother is like, oh, she sent you prison for a year. It's like, I could help you get your 2020 interview or whatever, just let me kill her.
Yeah,
I'll be doing both of us a favor. But he saves Sydney because she
agrees to go with him.
Like, which I don't consider know. Consider it done.
I don't know if that ever came to fruition. We don't find out, but
no.
I mean he. Well, I mean, yeah, no. By the next film, he has his fame. Yeah. So, any other thoughts on the second one?
I didn't care for the whole Dewey death scene. And
yeah, and he didn't even die. He just like.
Like,
he got fucked up, but he didn't kill him.
I mean, yeah. I mean, did his limp bother you at all? I mean, it definitely was.
He didn't walk enough. I don't know.
No, but
it didn't bug me.
Yeah, it bugged me. Just like the way he would run.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't know. As much as I liked him in the first one,
yeah,
and it was kind of cool to see them reunite. Like by the middle of it, like I kind of got tired of them.
I don't know. I mean, their relationship has like a goofy quality to it, but
well, he's a goofy character.
For me, it works. Yeah. You know, like they have really good chemistry together. So, I'm glad that you know throughout the entire franchise they've been a mainstay.
But
it's good.
I mean, but like it's kind of the same that when Courteney Cox and David Arquette. That was the first time working together, meeting each other, and you know they formed a real life relationship.
Yeah.
And then during the filming of the third one, they separated.
Of the third one or the fourth one?
Fourth one, I mean. Okay. Sorry.
But have you heard the rumors that they've been seen together again? So hopefully they could work things out.
Yeah.
They look like they belong together. So, thanks to the Scream movies. But I mean, overall, it's a good opening. Good setup, you know, and everything, but I don't know. It doesn't take.
It's not a bad film.
No, definitely not. It's not a bad film, like the one we're about to talk about.
Okay, so
I mean, it's decent. I mean, I still wouldn't say I like the movie, but yeah, it's not horrible. I think the opening keeps it from being horrible, and just the characters of
Sydney and they talk about rules for the sequels.
Yeah.
Okay, but now the third one. It was just goofy all the way through.
Well, so Scream 3 picks off. We pretty much, the opening we get this time is Cotton Weary.
The weakest opening.
Yeah. Cotton Weary's got his own show now called 100% Cotton, which is pretty awesome. I didn't even realize that. I didn't even realize why they called it that. I just realized that right now.
That's awesome.
It's pretty cool, but... So we got Cotton Weary, who's made it big. He's got his own talk show now. Yeah, like you said, the weakest opening scene.
Yeah.
The only cool thing they do introduce
is
through the film
is
the fact that now...
He can duplicate anybody's
voice. Yeah, he can duplicate anybody's voice, the ghost face. So that was cool, because you can never tell what's what. But I don't know. It was a silly opening.
It was a silly open, and this movie is set in Hollywood now. So
yes, Scream goes to Hollywood.
Scream goes to Hollywood. Like after so much of talking about Hollywood cinema, I mean, parodying, you know, commenting on Hollywood cinema, they actually are in the heart of it, and it just gets really goofy.
I mean, it's definitely appropriate for them to take it there, but yeah, I don't know. Let's start getting into the details. So now Sydney's kind of living out in the outskirts of LA, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. You didn't really find out. She's working as a counselor. She helps.
She worked entirely from home. She has a different name and everything. It seems like...
She has a security fence around her house.
And it seems like she has no social life whatsoever.
Yeah.
I mean, but like she's put up walls for a purpose because, you know, she can't trust anybody. And she also doesn't want anyone she cares about to get hurt.
Yeah.
So she set up those walls purposely.
Yeah.
I mean, she thinks it's for the better good, but you also get a sense that she's not happy with it either.
Yeah. I mean, I did like the aspect of her, like, you know, obviously she's been through a lot and how she's kind of taking that and trying to do good with that, trying to help other people out with their problems, even though she's got plenty of problems of her own.
But now she's being haunted by memories of her mother and who her mother was.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. Cheesy. Like the lady in white outside of her door.
Yeah, I mean, I understand they're trying to do something different.
Yeah.
And, there needed to be more scare aspects in there, because that movie wasn't scary by any means.
Yeah.
But to bring that whole haunting thing, I get it. It just didn't work. It wasn't executed well.
Yeah. So now they're in Hollywood, and there's this guy directing Stab 3, which is the return to Woodsboro.
Well, and again, it's a parody. They're parodying on just how horrible horror movie franchises are.
Yeah.
And so they're purposely in the movie, they're purposely trying to make Stab 3 look like this horrible film. It's like, why are they even directing it? But whatever.
Yeah.
It's supposed to come off as horrible and cheesy.
Yeah.
One of the actors in the movie, within the movie, Stab 3, Jesse McCarthy. Jenny McCarthy. Jesse.
Yeah.
Jenny McCarthy. I thought she was awesome. I mean, even though her role was small. But, she was awesome as, she's this B-list actor who it's very hard for her to find legitimate work.
Yeah.
And she gets stuck playing all these bit parts in these B-movies. And,
I don't know, they had a lot of recognizable faces. Emily Mortimer playing Sidney Prescott in the film, who's... timid girl. Yeah.
What was her name again? Emily Mortimer?
Yeah.
Yeah, she was, one of the stronger suspects.
Yeah, just because of how weird she was, yeah.
Yeah, but, it didn't fit, though.
No, there was no way.
Just, what a tiny frame she had.
Yeah.
But, you could... they were definitely purposely trying to set her up as a suspect.
Yeah,
because after the house explosion, you have Gale and Dewey who are on one side, and then after an attempted murder of Gale Weathers, mm-hmm. The killer gets away, and then you have Emily Mortimer's character who just shows up and is like, "Oh, what are you doing all the way over there?"
Yeah.
None of the kills were good, I thought.
Yeah, the only one that had promise was the Jenny McCarthy one, but to me, the same thing like the Michelle Gellar one, it ended way too quickly. There was no, chase aspect to it, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you have to have, this, it has to be, an ordeal when you're about to get killed, and they didn't do that at all.
It seems more like a joke than anything. It's like, aren't these people, really... I mean, you're about to get killed. I mean, it needs to be intense. It needs to be desperate, and it wasn't that.
This film took it so far into the humor realm of it's too much.
One of the main focuses of this movie, the third screen, was so Dewey and Gale are no longer together.
They tried to make it work, but it didn't work out.
But he has a relationship with Parker Posey's character,
yeah.
who's playing Gale Weathers, in Stab 3, and just that whole love triangle thing was, I mean, it was amusing, but it just put the movie somewhere else that wasn't a good place.
Yeah, I don't know.
Parker
Posey is a big reason. She was so. She was so silly.
But I did enjoy her, but it definitely didn't fit why I love Scream.
Yeah, well, no, definitely not. Well, there was nothing in this movie that had any of the aspects of what Scream.
But it was pretty entertaining to have these two people, Gale Weathers and this actress portraying Gale Weathers, as much as they don't like each other, they end up working together. Yeah. And it was pretty comical. It was pretty amusing to see them together.
Yeah, I mean, I can't say I wasn't amused by a lot of what this movie had, but...
I mean,
I wasn't scared ever.
Nah. As, as ill-fitting as that whole aspect was, I still enjoyed it. I just would have probably enjoyed it in a different film. Actually, I mean, for what Scream 3 was, I mean, because it definitely is the lesser of the three, I'll take it for what it was.
No, I wouldn't.
I mean, definitely. I mean, yeah, I'm agreeing with you that it definitely makes the movie weak, but it is what it is.
I guess that's the only thing you could really get out of it. I mean, I like her security guard. Like, he should have been in it more, but he died pretty fast. I love, there's a part where Dewey and Parker Posey, whatever, the fake Gale Weathers, they're kind of hanging out and they're talking, and Courtney Cox is eavesdropping on them outside, and then he, like, finds her. He tells her, there's already another Gale Weather here. There's no reason to have two. And just the way he just delivers his lines with, like, this deadpan, he's pretty awesome.
He's pretty awesome. He does Brock in... He did the voice of Brock.
He was Brock in Emperor's New Groove. Then, he played the Tick.
No, and he does an awesome job in Venture Brothers. He's the bodyguard. I've got the bodyguard name.
I haven't seen enough of that.
Yeah. Another cool cameo was Carrie Fisher.
Yeah, that was just fucking silly. Yeah. And then you had Jay and Silent Bob. I'm like, what is this? When they walked by, I'm like, they should have just had them walk by. There was no reason for them to fucking say anything. But yeah, the movie seemed like ridiculous, like how campy it was at times.
Yeah,
like over the top. Obviously that's something Wes Craven was going for, but I don't know why. Why would he take it that far?
It was just full on parody. Yeah. I mean, it sort of became like Scary Movie, and like as far as silliness is concerned.
Yeah.
By the time the third one was around, like, the whole parody thing was just too much. I personally got tired of the whole Gale Weathers Dewey thing. I was over
it. At points, I was bored with that aspect of it.
This Scream 3 is really hard to get through, actually.
I was kind of watching the films while I was, like, on the internet, just...
Yeah.
It made it a lot easier. I wasn't going to sit down and just give my full attention to Scream 3.
No, yeah, it's a hard film to get to. Get through, definitely. Okay, so they're in Hollywood. There's a killer mimicking, there's a killer killing people.
Based off a script of this film. But yeah. there's multiple scripts, so nobody knows. But I mean, it's not...
Long story short, the killer ends up being Roman, who's the director of Dab 3.
Scott Foley from Felicity fame.
And he actually turns out the big twist is, well, first of all, they're bringing up rules of a trilogy.
Yeah.
And one of the main rules is you bring up something from the past that you thought
from
was
the
true.
Original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That you thought was true that isn't. And in this case, they bring it back, the focus to Maureen. Mm-hmm. Prescott to his mother that she wasn't she had all these secrets and that she was just some struggling actress in Hollywood under a different name and everything and Sydney didn't know that
what's like the newfound truth though maybe that there was like a legitimate reason of why she ended up turning out the way she did as far as the mother the way her
Because
of what happened out in Hollywood, that's why kind of the rest of her life went that way.
Yeah.
And caused all this stuff to be set in motion.
Why she was having an affair with different men.
Yeah.
Notably, Cotton Weary and Billy Loomis' father.
Yeah.
Which is why Laurie Metcalf, her character, leaves Billy. Which traumatizes him. But I guess... another surprise or whatever that they reveal is that Roman, Scott Foley's character, he ends up tracing or finding
Billy.
Maureen.
Oh, okay.
Maureen and Sydney and seeing that that she creates this life that he's not a part of, a life that he always wanted.
Yeah.
And somehow, it's not made 100% clear, but there's some sort of connection between him and Billy. I'm not sure if they actually...
Yeah, he's... I mean...
They actually...
They did...
Contacted each other?
They did, yeah, he does hint that he kind of gave him the motivation to do what he did in the original films, you know? So, like, he was the cause of that. But then again, he says, I didn't think they would make their own movie. I don't know. Despite how bad the film was, I still thought it was a decent climax. It was decent enough.
The killer was her brother, Sydney's half brother.
Yeah, I still felt that reveal was okay, and the motivation behind it was good enough for me. But I don't know.
But yeah, definitely the weaker of the film.
Yeah, and I also liked how they were able to work in Randy.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I thought it was pretty silly how they worked him in. But I really loved it, and I really hope, like, Scream 4 finds a way to put Jamie Kennedy in the film.
There's not going to be. I don't think so.
I'm just hoping that I get surprised and they do that. But
yeah, I guess.
And then, like, just the whodunit aspect, you mentioned Emily Mortimer. They kind of hint at her being the killer, but other than that, there's not really...
Dempsey's character.
Yeah, they kind of hint at him, which I actually have Patrick... I enjoyed Patrick Dempsey in this. He was good. Yeah. And his partner was funny at times too. But yeah, that's the only thing you got out of the film. There was humor, but it's not a comedy. So,
Danny's kind of cool, I guess. Whereas like Sydney, she's just trying to, you know, she's like, "Fuck it, I'm gonna live my life," and the door swings open.
That was cool.
And like it just like you don't know with the win or what, but she just like looks at it and kind of shrugs like whatever.
Yeah, just let's go watch the movie with Dempsey and. But yeah.
All right. So
those are already overall horrible though.
I mean, yeah. So as a trilogy, not the best trilogy out there.
I wouldn't even point it out. Like.
Yeah.
I would have liked it if it was just one film. Yeah. To be honest.
I mean, I could definitely watch the first one a few more times.
Yeah.
But there's little replay value in the second and third one. I mean, there's...
Yeah.
The
first one, yeah, I'm not going to take anything away. I do love the first one, but there is kind of, like, lulls in certain parts, like, parts that are kind of drag for me in the middle, where you're with Sydney out in whatever. But, yeah, I don't know. Like, the second and third films aren't hard films to sit through. They're just not really good, you know. They're not hard to sit through for me at all. I mean, would I have the urge to watch them again? No. But they're not.
Well, the third one's really
They were hard. Easy to sit
well,
through.
Well, the third one I had a hard time. Like, I actually watched it in two settings. But, I don't know. Let's get on to our expectations for the fourth one.
What are your hopes?
It's been, what, 10 years? Or
yeah, it 15? Came out last... The last one came out in 2000.
2000.
So about 11 years.
Yeah, 11 years. My expectations? Well, I'm definitely interested to see what their commentary on... What their commentary is on where horror movies are now.
That's probably the thing I'm most excited about. Because, like, each film, as silly as it may have gotten, at least that aspect was fun.
Yeah.
When they're always trying to be clever.
And to be honest, like, there hasn't been a lot of notable horror movies since the short rise of slasher flicks in the 90s.
I think there's been a lot of great movies. A lot better than the 90s horror.
Well, let me rephrase that. There hasn't been a lot of work done in the slasher genre.
Yeah, well, it's a tiresome genre.
Yeah, the whole whodunit thing and whatnot. It's just like doesn't seem to be much interest in that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like lately, horror films I think concentrates more on the paranormal.
Yeah.
Like lately.
Mm-hmm.
If it's not a paranormal, it's a remake of a past successful horror film, or a horror film that didn't get attention enough and just remake it.
Yeah.
Or. Foreign horror.
A lot of the good horror nowadays is from other countries.
Yeah.
To be honest. So.
Which gets Americanized in remakes.
Yeah. But as far as Scream 4.
Well, I mean, so I'm wondering, Well, from the trailers, you already know they're going to bring up the whole remakes aspect.
Yeah.
But, you know, I want to see what else they bring up.
I don't know.
As far as, you know, where horror movies are nowadays.
The franchise, you know, mainly just kind of sticks to Hollywood films, so I don't know. Honestly, I don't think, outside of the remake, I don't think there's going to be much else brought up as far as that. I mean, I do expect the film to be funny, be clever. I just hope they have a good balance, and I don't know if they're going to.
It seems like they have the largest cast for a screen.
That's another thing I'm really worried about.
Well, no, I'm actually excited because okay, cool, we get a lot more kills.
Yeah, but
and I hope these kills are scary. I hope they're intense, and they're just good. They're just really great.
I don't know. Kills. Yeah, but how could it's worrisome because how could you have this big cast and expect, like, in order to be intense, you got to be somewhat invested in the character. And if there's so many fucking characters, how are you going to care? I mean, the opening is going to be cool because it's going to be a double death or whatever.
Yeah.
But there's so many.
Anna Paquin and Jamie Bell. I'm looking forward
to it. Okay, so you have Anna Paquin and Jamie Bell, and this is going to be one scene. And then you have Hayden Panettiere and that other chick. That's going to be another one. I don't know her fucking name. She's nobody.
She's Jamie.
Who is she? Gossip Girl? I don't know.
No. Who is she? Emma Roberts. She's Julia Roberts' niece.
Whatever.
That.
Honestly, I don't know who else she is, but I don't know. The huge cast worries.
Well,
me.
I mean, I kind of recognize most of these new faces.
Yeah.
For these films, but the cast seems to be primarily comprised of young people from TV shows that exist now. I mean, I don't watch any Pretty Little Liars is one of them.
Well, that's kind of what the original was. A lot of, like, young up-and-comers who had TV shows, and it was cool.
But, so Scream 4 is definitely bringing back a younger cast. Yeah. With, like, the third one, it was an older cast. So they're bringing fresh blood into the fourth one, and I'm really hoping to see Sydney finally get knocked off.
I hope they all get knocked off. I hope all three of them do.
Yeah, it'll be cool. It'll be dramatic. Holy shit!
I wouldn't be surprised if Sydney gets knocked off early in the film.
No, she's not getting knocked off.
No, she's probably not going to get knocked off at all, to be honest, but. It would be cool to see if she gets knocked off, like, halfway through.
I mean, I definitely get the feeling of, like, passing the torch. I think obvious survivors are going to be Hayden Panettiere and Emma Roberts' characters.
I think they're going to die in that scene. Definitely Hayden Panettiere. Oh, no, obviously not. No, because there's that whole scene. Because obviously something happens to them, and then there's this whole scene later on where they're, like, kind of in the interrogation room or whatever. They're kind of talking to the cops about the rules and everything.
I know the Scream franchise has been all about commentary and parodying other movies. But, I mean, I definitely hope that aspect is there, but I hope it's not overbearing in any way.
I think it's going to be.
I just hope that it's going to be more about kills and intense build-ups to the kills.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we get a lot of that. I just, you know.
I just want it to be scary.
I think it's going to be bad. I know. I
just want
it to be scary. It's going to go over the top with the cleverness. It's not going to be nearly the same level as Scream 3, but I don't know.
And something else on. Okay,
I'm excited.
Let's talk about Ghostface. We haven't talked about Ghostface.
You know what? There was something we didn't mention in the third Scream. I know it's not a good movie. We didn't even mention it. The part where she goes to the set, like, kind of goes back to her old home.
That was kind of cool.
I remember that. I remember that being really cool when I first saw it as a teenager. But then it wasn't that cool. Like, it was way too short. There was this whole scene where she goes into her mother's room where her mother got seen.
That was just horrible. It's like, stop with this whole mother thing.
To me, it creeped me out though. It did creep me out, like when she came out under the sheet and. I just thought we should have mentioned that part because it was a cool throwback to the first one.
Yeah.
But yeah,
seen it again and I was disappointed by it. But Ghostface? How could you really talk about Ghostface? It's just it's a bunch of people.
Yeah,
I think the image is okay. It's not
Yeah, the whole Ghostface costume, it's like not really scary. It's not scary.
Yeah, but just someone chasing you with a knife is scary.
Yeah. But yeah, even though Ghostface underneath the mask hasn't been the same person, and overall the essence of Ghostface has always been the same. I mean, as far as like that voice,
yeah,
and like just like how he talks to the victims when he calls them, the certain personality that Ghostface has, that's maintained by all these different killers who don the mask.
Yeah.
How would you describe that personality? Well, besides psychotic.
I don't know.
Like, I mean,
menacing and like playful in a way, though.
Yeah. So like, he's definitely not superior to like Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees.
But, anybody really?
I think he's. I think he has more in common with Freddy Krueger than the other two.
Yeah.
Of just how playful he is. But I guess I don't take him seriously, the Ghostface killer. I don't take him seriously, or I like get scared by him because like it's all about the quiet intensity that you don't know why the person is killing.
Yeah.
Like they're just doing it just for the sake of doing it. That's more scary when you don't know why. When
there's of course.
When there's a motive, like, I mean, it's still pretty interesting to hear the motive, but it's like, eh.
Yeah, I mean, that's what these movies are all about.
Yeah.
You know, the big reveal, and they gotta go through the whole process of explaining why they did it and exactly what their motive was.
Yeah, I mean, so...
Which in the original was awesome, how they played with motives and stuff, but...
It'd definitely be interesting to see who the killer is and to hear his motive.
Yeah, that's it.
To hear his motive after so many years, yeah. Like, why does somebody decide to take up the mask again? From the trailers, it seems like they're glorifying the whole Woodsboro murders and Ghostface killer. Like he's pretty much become commercial in the town of Woodsboro, which is kind of unrealistic.
Very unrealistic.
Because, I mean, to take murders like that and, like, just to pretty much make a holiday out of it, pretty much, is just offensive.
Yeah. It is. I don't know why they would go that route.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I just hope Craven toned it down, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he really needs to tone it down.
Tone down the whole commentary and parodying.
Yeah.
And
just make and yeah, build, like you said, make it about the scenes, and he needs to make it more build scary. It. Yeah.
I was watching a YouTube trailer of Scream 4, but it had commentary by this fairly funny guy, and one of his better lines was Sidney Prescott. He's going back to the town of Woodboro, like a girlfriend in an abusive relationship, she knows it's not good for her, but she keeps like going back to the same guy anyway.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, I mean, I'm interested to see how they set that up.
Yeah,
how they make sense of that, you know?
I mean, even though so many years has passed by since the last Scream, it would definitely be interesting to see what kind of person Sydney has become. But like, it also sort of like she's been through. These near death situations so many times, to me it seems kind of unrealistic for the person to be running. I mean, she, like, if I was her, you know, just have a fucking gun on you or just always have a weapon on you, because like you've been, you know, you know you attract all these psychotics, so
yeah.
You gotta, I mean, if I was her, going through all these killers trying to kill you,
yeah,
like, it seems like you'll be a definitely much more braver person. It's like, you know, like you trying to kill me, you know? Bam, you're
dead. Yeah, well, she
just have more protection around you, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the town of Woodsboro should be on alert every time,
she comes into town?
Sydney comes in. Oh, no, Sydney's coming to town. Murders are gonna follow.
Yeah.
She probably banned Sydney.
And I'm hoping, like, the audience today is into it.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, I don't know. I hope the turnout's really good, and I hope, you know, they're ready to have fun.
Yeah.
So hopefully
it is. That's what I'm going for. Yeah. I'm just going to have fun with it, and I just want to be...
I still want a decent film. I want a decent film.
That's at least on par with the first original Scream we started.
You can't expect it to be on par.
You could hope.
Well, I mean, you could hope, but don't expect it to be.
Alright, so any final thoughts on the Scream?
Not really. I'm excited.
I mean, it definitely ignited my interest in slasher films. I mean, Scream. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about this film. I mean, well, I was initially like ecstatic when I heard on Scream 4 is coming out, but like now after revisiting Scream and see what the franchise has become, I'm not setting my bar high.
Yeah.
But I'm still hoping, but I'm also ready to be disappointed too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. It's a new beginning for the franchise, and hopefully they take advantage of that fact.
Oh, just a little cool fact. Scream was inspired by real life serial killings of 5 college students in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
In this college community, Kevin Williamson, I think.
Yeah, he's a screenwriter.
Yeah, he's a screenwriter. This happened in the early 90s. And he just read about it and just started digging, and he came up with Scream. But I was reading into these murders in this college community in Florida. Five college students were murdered. I forgot the serial killer's name, but he was psychotic, and he's long dead.
Yeah.
He was successfully implicated in these murders and got a death sentence. But I was reading an article about the 20th anniversary. It was the anniversary of these college students' murders.
Yeah.
And the father of one of the victims, he returns home, to help honor the memory of not only his daughter that he lost, but all these others, but the other 4 students.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. To read this father's story, where it's like, okay, so after this murder happened to his daughter, him and his wife, they move to California or something, and they have another daughter or whatever, but the wife is murdered over there too.
That's fucked up.
Yeah, it's fucked up. And it just got me thinking, it's like, I wonder if he's together. But nah.
That's messed up.
But, the father returns, and he said that he hopes, him and his daughter could return to that town one day, and she could grow up there, whatever.
Yeah.
Free of any worry or fear or anything. But yeah.
Well, he's always going to be worried.
Yeah, because he's already had two loved ones taken away from him by murder. Kind of crazy.
Yeah.
All right. Tonight we're going to be watching Scream 4. We'll be back for the next podcast with a review of Scream 4.
As well as Hannah. Well, Source Hannah. Code and Insidious. You haven't seen Source Code yet?
Nah.
Check it out. You like it. It's good.
But don't sound so glum when you say Hannah. You should be more excited. We're going to review fucking Hannah.
Yeah, we're going to review Hannah. It's not a perfect film, but it is the best movie I've seen so far.
Okay.
It's not perfect. Anyway, later guys. Hope you catch Scream as well and enjoy it. Hopefully it's a good... Hopefully Wes Craven's back. I don't know. Maybe.
What's your favorite Scream movie? What's your favorite Scream movie? GTA 9, but... You know you said it in the 90s. The sun or the rain.
Baby, I'm your man. Baby, I'm your man.
Love.